For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and NHL are in full swing. And the only place you should be betting on these sports is at betonline.ag. Whether you're betting on a basketball game, or the Golden Globes, or The Bachelor, or the Oscars, BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. BetOnline has hundreds of props with real-time odds and almost anything you can imagine, and of course, the 24-hour online casino. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's betonline.ag. BetOnline, your online sportsbooks experts. What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of the Believe in Clippers podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. Jesse Cass here with Alex Acker. We have a great show for you here this week. The guys from the Locked On Clippers podcast will join us in just a few minutes, but right now Alex and I are going to kind of break down some of the weekend's games. Of course, the Clippers had a couple big ones, but Alex, how you doing?
Doing good. Doing really good. Staying warm out here.
Nice. Yeah, we knew that it was a big weekend coming up for the Clippers. We didn't know coming in how healthy they'd be. They'd of course been, you know, without four starters and had been making that work. They dropped the first Utah game, and then we kind of got the surprise news that everyone was back. You know, Kawhi Leonard from his injury, Nick Batum from his. You know, Luke Kennard was out. He came back, although he hasn't played in the past few games. And then, you know, I think most surprisingly, Paul George, who, you know, it's from that type of injury, thought it could be, you know, a couple weeks, you know, a month, but luckily for the Clippers, he's back, and at least in that first game against the second matchup with the Jazz, it paid off, and the Clippers ended the Jazz's 9-game win streak and got back in the win column there.
That was a tough game. The first game against the Jazz didn't have a presence as far as, you know, Kawhi and Paul George, which is definitely needed, man. I always believe in that 15-foot mid-range is a lost arc in the NBA, and those guys definitely have that attribute as far as getting to their spots and knocking down shots. And it's an efficient opportunity to actually get your, get to the ball, get to the rim at any time that they want to, but actually literally just like knocking down shots where they can be efficient with opponents like Gordon, big fella, just not blocking shots and also shots left and right. So I think that was a big thing as far as what was needed in the second game when they played against the Utah Jazz. And just actually knowing that they're capable of really being dominant from that standpoint right there. So just to see the presence of Paul George coming back with the Utah Jazz in the second game and getting that down was really huge for sure.
Yeah, and as we said, it was a big weekend for the Clippers. We know that. You know, that Jazz win was huge just to show, you know, I think obviously the Clippers have their title aspirations and are building towards what they hope is a long playoff run in the future. And Utah right now, at least to this point, has been the best team in the league. You know, they've won 20 out of 21 games. They've been rolling, had another 9-game win streak. So to get that win over them, I think was meaningful from that aspect. And like we said, just getting the lineup back together where, you know, it's going to take some time to redevelop that continuity, but just to see those guys come out and immediately play well again together was definitely encouraging.
For sure. Yeah, I really love the way the Utah Jazz is swinging that ball. Less dribbles on that court, making guys really have to react and play defense, swinging it to each side, and it's a really good thing, you know what I mean, to watch, for sure. But I'm really glad that we got that win more than anything, for sure.
Yeah, no, they followed up, as mentioned. They had the game against the Brooklyn Nets. You know, the lineup for the Clippers luckily was healthy again. It was an odd game. You know, it's one where Kawhi and PG were both awesome. Unfortunately, the Clippers, you know, they lost the game, and PG, you know, he's still healthy, but they basically had to take him out at the end of the game due to a minute restriction with him coming back. And, You know, no one else in the lineup outside of Zubats really played well. And with all of that said, high turnovers, you know, those other factors, it was still a game the Clippers had a chance to win. They came back from 15 points down, tied the game, then had the ball down two with about 10 seconds to go. And, you know, I'm never one to blame an entire game on the refs. As you said, the Clippers made plenty of plenty of mistakes on their own where they could have played so much better in this game. But just a really unfortunate call at the end of the game where not a lot of contact. If anything, Harden initiates the initial contact. Kawhi finishes the layup and instead gets called for the offensive foul. And it's just one of those things where I'm sure you felt this way as a player too, but in a game that's with so much talent on the floor, it's such a hard-fought game, to have it essentially decided by the referees and feel like it's their moment. Yeah, it just takes away pretty much from the entire game for, I feel like, for both sides. You know, the Nets, who played a great game, and the Clippers just, oh, we're going to base it all on this one, you know, bogus call. And it was a tough way to finish that game.
No, for sure. You got to really let the game play out from that standpoint. I remember from the All-Star game, that little flop ended the game with the two free throws, you know what I mean? So from that standpoint, you got to let the game play out. Nobody came to see the referees. And it's strangely, oddly enough, that, you know, Harden's defense is him flopping, you know what I mean? So he uses it to his advantage very well. And, you know, it just paid off from that standpoint. Which sucks, you know, to end it like that, for sure.
And listen, I'm not one to, as I said, trash James Harden. He had a crazy game again, which, he's one of the best players in the game. He had 37 points and 11 assists. He was dominant. But in the end of the game, as you said, you know, credit to him, I guess, you know, he got the call. But, you know, you think you would want to take some pride in actually playing real defense. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, why, if you're going to be competitive and be going up against the best guys, why not just try to make an actual defensive play instead of flailing on the floor and getting that BS call? You know, it's embarrassing for him. It's embarrassing for the ref who made the call. And, you know, instead, it's just a kind of cast a shadow on what was otherwise, a fun game and a showcase game for the league to have it end like that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I agree with you.
You know,
I can see some animosity inside. I'm definitely pissed about that.
No, like I said, I'm not one to trash Harden. I think Harden's one of the best players in the game, and I'm not, you know, throwing shade at him, but it's just an unfortunate way to end that game. But as I said, credit to James Harden. He got the call, and, you know, a day later, got the NBA to say that was the correct call, for whatever that's worth. So the Nets got the win, and the Clippers will look to bounce back, and luckily they're fully healthy going forward.
For sure, for sure.
And with that, we know it's a little bit of a short intro here with Alex. We know your schedule's been pretty packed in Italy, but we appreciate you taking the time. And we're going to transition and get ready for our conversation with the Locked On Clipper guys, Charles Mockler and William Updike. So, Alex, thanks for checking in, and we'll be back at it again next week with you.
Let's go. All right.
We're now joined by our guests here on the Believe in Clippers podcast, the hosts of the Locked On Clippers podcast on the Locked On Network, Charles Mockler and William Updike. You guys, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, so you obviously do a great job on the Locked On Network. You have a daily podcast over there and cover the Clippers, and not a bad time to be covering the Clippers, of course. Another season where they're trying to put themselves in championship contention. So far, you know, kind of a general question, but what have you seen from this team recently in the early part of the season that you've liked so far?
I mean, I think the biggest thing, there's ball movement. Ty Lue has made a huge impact. You know, even before he stepped on the floor, we saw a starting lineup switch, which I think shocked a lot of people, but it's paid off. And then we had the Morris-Batum switch, which was great too. And I think another thing is the energy is just different. It seems like all the guys like each other, and it seems like they like each other even when they're correcting mistakes or something like that. I'm not sure if last season, if we had a 50-point loss, if we would have been able to bounce back as fast. But yeah, I think the whole energy feels great around the team right now.
I mean, I agree with you. And how much of that do you attribute to Ty Lue, to personnel change with, you know, certain guys going in and new guys, or certain guys going out, new guys coming in? What can you pinpoint as the reason why the chemistry seems to be better this year?
I don't want to put it all on certain personnel changes, but I think, you know, a lot of Clippers fans, if you've, you know, we've seen Marcus Morris become more of a leader this year, and he's even talked about how last year there was some issues when he would be vocal in the locker room And pretty much everyone other than, you know, Trez and Rodney Magruder, and I don't think it was Rodney Magruder who was being too vocal, is still with the team. So I think it's the personnel change, and I think it's that Ty Lue holds guys a little more accountable. Doc Rivers has, you know, we've seen those interesting quotes about, you know, not wanting to be the guy who did preferential treatment for players, but he was the head coach, and we haven't really seen any of that stuff. So it seems like Ty Lue's been a pretty big difference maker in that, just locker room as a whole.
Yeah, and one of those new pieces, of course, is Nick Batum. I know you guys spearheaded the movement of the Batum Battalion. I just got to know from you guys, did you realize when you were starting this how big it would become, not only getting an Avengers-like shout-out from Brian Seaman on the broadcast? We have over 16,000 votes for Nick Batum for the All-Star game. It's been quite the movement that you guys really started.
You know, I had some indication that he was going to be a really good fit for the team. It was one of those signings that I thought kind of went under the radar by the media, like initially when it happened. And I just saw in Nick Batum a guy that was like the sort of glue guy that we were kind of missing on the bench last year. Just a 3-and-D type of guy who can play make a little bit, handle the ball a little bit. And I was surprised that he did end up keeping that position in the starting lineup. I didn't envision Marcus Morris being so flexible to see how good everything was coalescing on that unit and ask to go to the bench. I did not see that coming. But I have been impressed with his play, but I wouldn't say it was unexpected.
Yeah, and Charles, I know you and I were talking a bit before we recorded. You know, Alex and I were both optimistic about Nick Batum, but kind of similar to what you guys were saying, maybe not to this level. It's been in that way a surprise at just how impactful Nick Batum has been, even for those who thought he would be a good signing.
Yeah, I mean, even the biggest Batum believers wouldn't think he's, you know, starting in the best half-court offense in the league right now, but we'll take it.
Yeah, no question. I also got to ask, are there any other alliteration style names for anyone else on the roster that are coming up, that new t-shirts maybe for someone else on the roster as well?
We've got a couple requests for the Maniacs for Terrence Mann, but we're not entirely sold on that one yet. It's got to come up a little more naturally, I think.
Yes, it's got to be a little more organic and happen naturally. But
yeah. I've been playing around with Luke Canardo Da Vinci 3, but I don't know. It might be a little too long. It doesn't quite roll off the tongue.
I mean, it's good to throw that out there. You know, if Luke paints a masterpiece on the court and hits like 10 threes in a game, then maybe we can put that one in the works.
He has to earn it for sure.
Yeah. You know, speaking of Luke Kennard, that's a good segue. What have you guys seen from him? I know the shooting percentages are very good, but there's just been some, I don't call it hesitancy to shoot as much. We know he's been pushed by the coaches and the team to be more aggressive. What have you seen from Luke that you've either liked or disliked so far in the early part of this season?
So I've been really surprised, I guess, with how we used him. I think when that signing happened, I was just looking at the role that he played in Detroit and his ball handling skills. And I kind of thought he would have the ball in his hand a little bit more, be creating a little bit more, not as much of like the Landry Shamet sort of motion catch and shoot type of a role. And I think, you know, he can fill that role. He's a great shooter. But I see a lot of uncomfortability when he doesn't have the ball in his hands. You know, he can cut. It is something that I think consistency has been the biggest issue in trying to get him comfortable in that role, like not getting real consistent minutes, not fully understanding where he fits into the offense. And then, you know, lately with Lou Will's resurgence, that takes the ball out of Luke Kennard's hands even more, as it probably most likely should. I mean, I think most Clippers fans would down the stretch prefer to have Lou Will kind of, you know, taking those shots and having the say in that. But I see a lot of potential. To me, you know, how we develop this asset is going to say a lot about this franchise moving forward. He is one of the youngest pieces, and we do have a fairly large commitment to him starting next season for the next 4 years.
Yeah, as you mentioned, he signed that extension this summer that kicks in next year. You know, a big part of why maybe Kennard, as you alluded to, hasn't played as much as we might have seen or had that role is because, as you said, Lou Williams, we've even seen Reggie Jackson play really well and have the ball in his hands a lot. And Terrence Mann, of course, with the Maniacs out there. You know, how much has that been a factor in, you know, both positively for the team and how well those guys have played, but also maybe affecting Kennard and what his role is going to be going forward?
I think with Kennard, you know, I think he knows what his role is. It's been pretty clear, like, you know, we've heard from players, Marcus Morris has talked about it this season, guys know exactly what they're supposed to do. Whereas last season, there was a little more kind of wondering what's going on. So I think Kennard knows what he has to do, but I just think it's hard when you have kind of a logjam of guards who aren't exactly elite, but all kind of fill the same level of play just in different ways. And he's just not feeling it right now. So I think we're going to probably see some rotation. You know, I think he's going to be up, and then Terrence Mann might go back down to earth at some point. I mean, hopefully not for his development. But, you know, as these things go, I think, you know, Ty Lue is down to move guys in and out of the lineup. So I think that bodes well for Kennard in the long run. He's just got to put together a string of, you know, more than solid performances when it matters and not necessarily in garbage time.
Yeah, and one thing that's been fun to see and nice to see, and I think was expected coming in with Ty Lue as the head coach, and you mentioned a little bit there, but his adaptability as a head coach and the willingness to make adjustments, which might have not been the case in the past. What have you seen from Ty Lue in that aspect of his coaching and how that's helped the team so far?
Well, I mean, I think that he's been pretty straightforward with parts of the process. We saw in the after the first 10 games, he was talking about the three-guard lineup not really working out. You know, we've seen him experiment more with defensive matchups, whether it's, you know, running a little bit of zone, trying switches. And he's, you know, he's been pretty vocal in, you know, some of their decisions in pick and roll coverage, which has been an issue for the Clippers. So it's nice as a fan to see that stuff. Like, obviously you can see what's happening on court if you watch the Clippers a lot, but to hear it vocalized and internalized by the organization is like a level of transparency that I don't feel that we had last year. And then if you look at this team in third quarters, we're performing overall much better than we did last season and the season before, which is pretty indicative of a coach, you know, making changes.
Yeah, no question. And the three-point shooting this year has been off the charts. The Clippers, you know, on pace to be one of the best three-point shooting teams percentage-wise in league history. Is that something you expected from this team in this system? What have you expected three-point-wise from the Clippers coming in?
I don't know if I expected this amount of absurd efficiency. You know, we talked about Batum off top. He's in the 40s. Kennard's in the 40s. Paul George, I think you do expect it somewhat. Everyone wanted him to take more threes than he was last season. And, you know, when he's healthy, that seems to be something that's happening. But I think we just got to ride it out. We might go down to, you know, a paltry 38% at some point, because I think we're at 43 or something right now. But it is. It really is just an eye opener in terms of how different the ball movement looks. Even when PG and Kawhi are out, Nick Batum will still get 9 three-pointers off, and you know half of them will be technically wide open or whatever that is. So that's just a big credit to Ty Lue and how he's drilled these guys down in a season with no off season. And you know he's talked about we don't even have all the offensive sets in yet. So I think it's really just a big testament to how good Ty Lue is as a coach.
Yeah, I think the ball movement has been the most surprising aspect. I mean, the shooting, you know, out of this world, but just the type of shots that we're getting, we're generating more open looks than any other team in the league. And that to me is something that continues. Whether the percentages stay the same or not, the quality of the shots that we've been generating is always there. And I think as long as that continues, I'll be happy, you know, whatever the percentages do.
Want to give a brief moment to talk about our newest sponsor, eBay. Whether dead stock or the latest release, find the exact shoe you're looking for. As the original sneaker marketplace, eBay is the place to go to cop the pair that you've been eyeing. With eBay's authenticity guarantee, your sneakers are meticulously inspected by independent professional authenticators. A team of experienced sneaker authenticators verify the box, logo, stitching, and dozens of other inspection points. Each sneaker also receives an authenticity guarantee tag that includes a digital stamp of authenticity, and it also protects sellers with a verified return process. And for the sneaker sellers out there, eBay has eliminated selling fees on sneakers of $100 or more, making it free to sell or flip your collection. Go to ebay.com/sneakers today. eBay, the world's best destination for discovering great value and unique selection.
And the ball movement, I think, I agree with you guys, has been incredible this year, and the assist numbers are high. You know, in the national media, there's always the call for, oh, the Clippers don't have a true point guard. The numbers don't necessarily bear that out. We know Kawhi Leonard has stepped up as a playmaker. Paul George has. Do you guys think that there's a need for an additional pure point guard, or do you think this roster is sound the way it is?
I don't know what pure point guard is out there that we could put a package together for that doesn't kind of gut us depth wise, right? Like, people were really hyped on trying to trade for 1 year of Kyle Lowry or something like that, which would, hey, the starting five, sure, that would be great. But everyone after that, it's a pretty hard fall off that you can't get through the playoffs with. So, I mean, no, I guess is like the way that I would put it. I just don't see all the moves. You know, the salaries are kind of tight on the Clippers in terms of how we can move guys. Kennard's extension kicks in next year, which makes things a little tough. So I think they just got to stand pat. And just personally, I'm a little tired of franchise shaking trades, especially when the team looks the best that it's ever looked, maybe in its history this year.
So I think from a talent perspective, like, I agree with Charles. I think we need to be done sort of acquisition-wise. To me, looking at this roster and the potential of the construction that's there, to me, is a championship-level roster. I think that if you optimize the pieces correctly, you have every piece that you need to build out a championship roster. So I would prefer if we don't make any moves, at least until the end, like until the end of the season, you know, when Kennard's contract kicks in and we have a little bit more movable salary. Otherwise, I just don't see a needle moving type of a trade that really, to me, is like, oh, you know, that's what gets it done. That's what puts them over the edge. And not for lack of trying. I've looked.
Yeah, this is something that I talked about with Andrew Greif on the show last week. And, you know, Lou Williams is always the name that comes up because he has, you know, the most cap-friendly contract at about $8 million a year. And, you know, obviously teams have interest in Lou. But, you know, for someone who took less money to stay with the team, someone who is a real leader in that locker room, as you said, looking around the league in the similar salary range, it would have to be a real kind of earth-shattering move, I feel, to give up someone like that who's been so important to the team and their culture.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, Lou has on nights carried this team. Certainly, you know, last season he was leaned on a lot more than he really should have been, which, you know, part of it was due to injuries. You know, we have had some issues with the consistency of this lineup, but I don't know. He's so dependable, you know, has had some issues in the playoffs. But like, I think that, you know, with a player like that, you sort of have to take, you know, the roses and the thorns. And I think it's definitely both. And, you know, maybe you see a trade for like a more defensive minded guard. But like, are they that good defensively that it's making up for like the 20 points that Lou Will can go off for on any given night? Like, I just, you know, someone who can get to the foul line quite as well. I just see his skill set as being so valuable, especially for, I mean, the paltry sum that he's getting paid, that I don't see moving Lou as like, yeah, being able to net a whole lot more.
And Charles, what about you? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I just don't see it. Everything just seems like a lateral move that kind of just puts us in the exact same spot, you know? Like, that player's not going to get more playoff minutes than Lou Williams. And I don't know what team, just kind of from a logic perspective, would think, oh, yeah, let's make this Clippers team better. You know, I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, that's it's seemingly every potential trade target outside of a few, or the names that have come up, while they may be talented players, seem like they don't really – fit, or that it's just kind of something that the Clippers already have. You know, you throw out names like, as you said, obviously you'd love to have a Kyle Lowry, but that's a little unrealistic. But, you know, PJ Tucker, can he really do more than Marcus Morris is doing for the team? You know, things like that, where I think, as you said, the roster construction is really strong. And like we've heard in the past, you know, health and luck play a big part in this. And if this team is healthy, then they should have a good shot going into the playoffs.
One thing I feel like we're not talking about enough, like with fans or like anytime trades kind of get brought up, is we know what this team looks like when it has poor chemistry. We know what this team looks like when guys aren't getting along and they don't want to, you know, really fight and grit it out on a night in, night out basis. And I think that's something that's worth considering with every single trade. Like, sure, like maybe you can get a marginally better player than Lou Williams. Like, let's just say that player is out there for $8 million. What is the effect of that on the locker room? Do they mesh into the same thing as well? Do they understand their role as well as a vet, like, you know, like Lou Williams? Because I think that these things are important. You know, we tried to glance some of this stuff off last year. I know I certainly did, even being in that locker room and knowing sort of like what that, you know, what was kind of going on in there. And it's not something that can be overlooked. Guys who like to play together, guys who can hold each other accountable without getting, you know, defensive towards one another. I think that's really important and can go a long ways, especially when you need to make a deep playoff run and you're playing, you know, you gotta, it's hard to beat a team four times back to back to back, you know, like it's not easy. And I think just those little marginal things, like everybody getting along, can help you out.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And yeah, I think right now, like we said, the biggest thing kind of standing in the way of this Clippers team being the best version of itself is just getting healthy. You know, obviously, Kawhi Leonard, I don't think his injury is as serious. You know, Paul George, they're all questionable to play as we record this before the second Jazz game. But, you know, those are injuries that obviously the Clippers need to get right for their important players. But when they're all together, you know, they played really well as a group. I believe they're 15-3 when both Kawhi and Paul George have played together this year.
Yeah, hopefully we get some combination of them back for the Jazz game. The Nick Batum one's interesting too, because there's no real timeline with concussions and all that. But I think Clippers fans will be, if we can get it out of the way right now, it's a pretty good time to get this whole situation out of the way at once, I guess.
Yeah. The only negative, I guess, is just that it comes in, you know, the stretch against some other really good teams where you're just missing out on maybe some more exciting basketball. But the Clippers, you know, played a really strong game for three quarters against the Jazz the other night. And, you know, maybe they can take one and we'll see if there's a game added against the Jazz later in the year. But yeah, the tiebreaker first seed scenario is really the only real negative, I think, to come out of the injuries happening right now.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, you know, the other thing is like with the stretch of games that we've been playing this month, you know, Jazz twice and then taking on the Grizzlies twice and ending this month with Milwaukee. I mean, for a fully healthy roster, that's a great litmus test to see where you are at in this halfway point of the season. So while it's certainly been disappointing to not have full health, I think it has been kind of promising seeing some of these deeper rotation guys like actually be able to play rotation level minutes. I mean, if you would have asked me a month ago if Terrence Mann could be, you know, like a rotation ready player, I would have said no. And, you know, Reggie has stepped up his play in this stretch. We've seen Lou Will finally get over the hip thing and go back to doing Lou Will things. So I think that it has been good to sort of test this depth, just so guys know that at any moment their number can get called and they've already been sort of battle tested to be in the scenario.
Yeah. And you always hear the moniker of next man up, but it's obviously much harder to pull off for that next man to come up and perform. But maybe it's due to that chemistry you're talking about of this team, you know, knowing what's expected of them and liking each other, but pretty much everyone you can think of who has played has stepped up in a way. Reggie Jackson, Terrence Mann, the game Amir Coffey had the other night. The fact that those guys can come in and step up the way they have has been impressive, and I think is a good sign.
Yeah, I mean, Coffey turning into J.J. Redick has been great. I don't know if you've looked at his G League stats, but he's shooting a lot better with the first team right now than with G League. So let's hope that keeps up for however long we need him.
Yeah, that was a funny quote. It was like when he shot 14 threes, they knew he was ready to come in and let it fly from the G League to the NBA. But yeah, what a surprise, you know, what an espresso shot there. I'm not Brian Seaman, but what a great thing for Amir Coffey to come in and, as you said, just turn into a sniper of all of a sudden.
Yeah, I mean, this has been kind of one of those things that has sort of nagged this organization, right? Like how we can draft and how we can develop guys that aren't like, you know, not already knockout prospects. And I think that, you know, this year is the first time in a while where, you know, we have seen some semblance of player development. And I don't know if that's due to credit Kenny Atkinson, you know, being sort of in charge of that. He certainly did a great job in Brooklyn. But we've seen these guys kind of take a step towards being rotation level guys. And that's the thing, right? Like if you want to be a championship team that makes a long run, you know, over a period of years, you have to have that balance of the top tier talent, as well as being able to extract maximum value from some of these, you know, more budget friendly contracts. And I think that it's something that the Clippers have struggled with for, you know, years and years. And to be able to get rotation level guys out of these later draft picks, out of getting some guys from the G League, I think goes a long way towards, you know, longevity of maintaining a competitive level of basketball for a franchise.
It's certainly refreshing. And obviously on a contender, you're going to have a lot of veterans who are playing a lot. But, you know, I think we all remember not that long ago, the Lob City days where, you know, there were some young players who ended up turning into rotation players elsewhere, like Reggie Bullock, who never played, and he brought in guys who were probably a little bit washed, like Danny Granger, and saw those young guys kind of waste away. So it's it's nice to see some of these young guys starting to take a step forward.
Yeah, it gives a boost too, just if kind of big picture wise too, that it kind of shows Kawhi, not only can we keep guys who we like obviously we're locked in with Morris and Kennard pretty firmly for this hopefully next contract that Kawhi signs with the Clippers, but that we can get some good stuff out of guys we draft. So it doesn't have to be all, you know, there is some development stuff that we don't have to rely all on signings and whatnot. So who knows if that makes, you know, any effect on Kawhi, but it definitely doesn't hurt
him. Yeah, and you know, it's obviously not as important as the on-court product, but we know Kawhi Leonard was named an all-star starter. You know, Paul George is widely expected to be an all-star reserve. And for whatever reason or not, Kawhi Leonard has MVP-type numbers but has not been in that conversation a lot. What have you guys noticed from that? Do you think that he should be in that top tier for the MVP conversation? And do you care? Does it matter at all?
I don't know if it matters to Kawhi. I mean, I think that he would be happier with the finals MVP, but like personally, and as a fan, yeah, I do think that it's worth the conversation. I think that for some reason there's other like superstars, all-stars that are in that MVP conversation that also have help on the team. But for some reason, there's this perception that the Clippers team is already too good. sort of without Kawhi. So I'm not sure I quite follow that. I'm not sure I quite follow that train of logic. But I mean, I think that the way he stepped up his play is there. I think that this year we're seeing a more consistent effort from him on both ends of the floor. And just, you know, like, I think that the way that he's approached his leadership as a player this season is like, you know, vastly different from the way that he came at that last year. Obviously, it being a very new scenario for him, being, you know, having to be the leader of a team. And I think that, you know, that is one of those things that if you don't watch the team enough, you probably, you know, you're not going to get that from the box score. But yeah, I think the way that he stepped up in all those areas, like I mentioned, to me would merit some conversation for the MVP.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what else he has to do to really get into the conversation more. I think a big part of it is that the media really went all in on the Clippers last season, and then everyone pretended like the Clippers had gone all in on themselves, when in reality it was the media pumping the Clippers up, and they kind of collapsed in the bubble. So I think a lot of media members are upset that they, you know, picked the wrong team for the most part, and I think that plays a big factor into it. And there's, you know, there's the stigma against the quote-unquote load management that everyone just kind of forgot about as soon as Kawhi started playing back-to-backs. Like, it was just kind of announced, and no one really seemed to care, despite pounding the table anytime he would, for very good reasons, you know, sit out a back-to-back. So I think it's Clippers bias. I think the fact that Kawhi is the quietest superstar maybe the league has ever seen, I think that plays a big factor into it as well.
Yeah, certainly. And it is funny to see – you know, every national media thing has different personalities who have different opinions. But, you know, over the summer when the Clippers, you know, lost Trez to the Lakers and Jermichael Green left, you know, a lot of those moves when the Clippers signed Serge Ibaka and Nick Batum were kind of either ignored or kind of laughed at by the national media. And now, like you said, Will, it's like, oh, now they have too much talent. You know, which one is it from the media? Are they too good, or are they not good at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's whatever is the more click-worthy headline at the time. You know, looking at the moves that we made this, you know, this offseason, I think it's hard for me to not say that everyone was an upgrade to what the Clippers need specifically. I think that, you know, if you look at just certain aspects of a player, you know, maybe you could see it as a step down in certain ways. I mean, Serge Norzu is the finisher that Trez was. Both of them more capable defenders. So, you know, I was really worried about the loss of Jermichael Green, Nick Batum. You know, that was part of the reason I was so excited for that signing. He's overachieved that. And then Shamet, who I'm glad to see that he is kind of getting his shooting stroke back in Brooklyn, but we wanted somebody who could do a little bit more, you know, with the ball in their hands, and be a little bit more consistent of a shooter. And I think that we found that in Kennard. So, I do think that the talent is there. I think the moves that we made make sense, but it's still not a team. It's not a team that's like really a, you know, a huge contender if you take away one of Kawhi or Paul George. And, you know, like, I think that we did a great job, though, of building around those guys. Like, these are all guys who complement those two players.
Yeah, certainly. And I think, you know, that can be true of any real contender. You know, you take one of LeBron or Anthony Davis off the Lakers, they'll probably struggle a little more. Durant or Kyrie off the Nets, you know, so on and so on. But we know it's hard to gauge it this early with still a little more than half the season to go until the playoffs. But where do you gauge where this team is at in terms of championship expectations and what you see for them, you know, going forward down the stretch into the playoffs and for their ultimate goals?
Expectation-wise, I think it's still, you know, personally, as a fan, I just want to see us in the Western Conference Finals. I think after that, with how crazy the West has been this year, kind of anything goes. You look at if the Jazz can keep up this level of play, you still have to get by the Lakers. The Nuggets are going to be a tough seed to get through. The West is going to be brutal. So I think once you get past that Western once you get into the Western Conference Finals, it's not a crapshoot, but it's really a lot more up in the air than those early rounds with how good the West is. But I think the Clippers' expectation is still, it's not championship or bust. It's pretty much, it feels like Western Conference Finals are bust because we got to show that we can get past that first initial hump. But I think the team, the playoff floor is a lot higher, which I think really helps this team out overall. We got two, you know, rim protectors for the most part compared to last season. So, I mean, I think sky's the limit for this team. It looks, I'm more confident at this point this year than I was last year.
Definitely. I mean, for me so far, the team has exceeded expectations, even with key rotation players in and out of the lineup. Look, I thought whole new coach, you know, some new players in, obviously, you know, shifting the roles a little bit for Kawhi and Paul George. I thought this was going to take a much longer adjustment period. I thought that, you know, 15, 20 games in, you know, we might be as low as 500 and just still trying to figure things out. So this team has far exceeded that for me. And I think that, you know, we have a couple of statement wins, and against, you know, contenders, we have been able to hang in there, even with guys out. You know, you look to the Nets game, very, very close. You know, you can't put too much into the opening season wins necessarily against the Lakers and Nuggets, but on a night-in, night-out basis, I've been so impressed with, like, what this team is willing to do to get a win, which is not something that we saw last season. And I think that it's just – it's about building the foundation, right? It's about building these habits that you can then rely on when you get to the, you know, when you get to the deep rounds of the playoffs. And I think that we've done a much better job of that this season than we did last year.
Yeah, it certainly seems like the overall fit of the roster is better, whether the talent is, you know, slightly less than last year's team or not. And like you said, and you've mentioned a couple times, just the chemistry, you know, really can't be understated in a team that likes each other and likes playing with each other, and you know, what that can provide for them later in the year.
Absolutely.
All right, guys. Well, this has been awesome. Thank you guys so much for coming on the show. Obviously, I'm sure everyone listening knows all you guys, and check out the Locked On Clippers podcast, where you guys do a great job with your daily pod. But yeah, thanks so much again, Charles Mockler and William Updike, for coming on the show and talking some Clippers basketball.
Absolutely. Yeah, appreciate it. This was super fun, Jesse. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So that will do it for this week's edition of the Believe in Clippers podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in, and a big thanks again to our guests, Charles Mockler and William Updike, the guys from the Locked On Clippers podcast. Be sure to follow along with their podcast as well, and check them out on Twitter. They do a lot of fun stuff there. And of course, as we mentioned in the interview, the commanders, the leaders of the Batum Battalion, which continues to take off. So hopefully you can get one of those great shirts that they have out there. I know they were limited quantity, but a big thanks again to those guys. As we said, thank you guys for tuning us in. If you enjoy the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple or wherever else you get your podcasts, including Spotify, Google Play, TuneIn, iHeart, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. We're there. And of course, Believe.com, where there's hundreds of shows all around the sports landscape, including all across the NBA. So with all that said, we'll be back again next week as well, as the Clippers look to bounce back from that Nets game, and most importantly, stay healthy and get things rolling from there, which it looks like, you know, knock on wood, to this point, they are going into that Wizards game here later today on Tuesday as we release this podcast. No injuries reported, so good news there. So we'll keep you updated, check it all out. And we'll talk to you again later on the Bleed Podcast Network, LA's number one sports podcast network, and the only place for the show for every team in LA and more. We believe in our LA teams. Do you believe? Go Clips.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.